Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber, your host. On today's show, the global debate over encryption. Joining me to discuss this is Amy Stepanovich, U.S. Policy Manager at Access Now, an international civil society organization specializing in human rights and technology. Amy, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
So before we jump into the global debate on encryption, we recently had an episode about a bill in Congress that got pilloried by critics for essentially banning end-to-end encryption, and Julian Sanchez, a colleague of ours at the Cato Institute, joined the show to talk about that. So I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts on that U.S. effort on encryption before we jump into the global debate.
Sure. What we're seeing right now in Congress is a debate where a lot of people who don't necessarily understand the technology and aren't speaking to people who understand the technology are trying to create a legal solution to a problem that basically technologists have agreed for almost 30 years, over 30 years, that you can't create a solution to. And so the Burr-Feinstein bill is the latest iteration of this, and it basically would undermine security across the internet. And not only encryption, but also, if you read the bill true to its text, it potentially could prevent the deletion of data and all sorts of other practices that you would consider best practices in regard to digital security hygiene.
Yeah, and of course the FBI used to think encryption was a good way to protect against cybersecurity breaches until, funny enough, that blog post got deleted from their website and their rhetoric changed quite dramatically. And encryption's obviously a global issue because U.S. technology companies do, some of them like Apple, do two-thirds of their business overseas. And no matter what we do on encryption in the United States, other countries are going to do different things, and other entities, even criminal organizations, could develop their own apps, even if we mandate backdoors into companies like Google and Apple. So it's important to talk about the global context. And your organization, and ours for that matter, we do believe there is a need for global leadership on encryption. Can you talk about why you think it's so important for a global leader on this issue?
Sure. So you have countries all over the world who are now picking up on the debate of over-encryption that's happening in the United States and trying to mirror that debate in their own jurisdictions. And so two of the most notable examples, one is in China. And in China, back in December, they actually passed legislation that would essentially prevent companies from implementing end-to-end encryption, which, if you know technology, you know, is kind of the strongest encryption currently available. That encryption where only the sender and the recipient of the message can access the text of the message. And so they basically require that all companies retain access to the content that transit their network, despite best practices and despite the level of security the company wants to provide. When the U.S. attempted to criticize that legislation, China essentially came out and said, this is exactly the conversation that you're having in your country. How can you criticize us for doing the same thing?
And of course, we have an outsized influence on what other countries do in the world because the top technology companies are either in the United States or in China, at least the top 10. And we can't, it's extremely hypocritical for us to go around the world and tell other countries not to do the things that we're considering doing. And even if we're not, even if the legislation didn't pass and people, you know, piled on and called it ridiculous and technologically illiterate, anything we do over here and that type of rhetoric that comes from the FBI director, that could legitimize China's position.
Exactly.
And so when we talk about countries like China calling us hypocrites and things like that, where is President Obama? It seems like he's been missing in action from this debate.
So we actually, Access Now, along with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF, wrote a petition, and with many of our partners, groups like Tech Freedom and also Fight for the Future, some of us, Mozilla, lots of the different technology companies, basically aimed a We the People petition at the White House. And We the People is a forum that the White House established a while ago that said, if you petition us and ask for something and you meet this requisite threshold for signatures, we will respond to that question and we will provide a substantive policy response to what you're asking us for. So essentially, we asked the president to take a demonstrative, express stance on encryption and to support it, not only to take a position, but to support encryption and to take his stance as a global leader and as somebody who can influence this debate around the world. We met his threshold, which is 100,000 signatures within 30 days. We actually met it with time to spare and surpassed it. And that was 170 days ago. We still haven't gotten a response, even though if you look on the website, they actually say that they're going to do everything within their power to respond to petitions within 60 days. So they're now well over 100 days over their own limits.
Yeah, and listeners, if you want to sign the petition yourselves, you can go to savecrypto.org, and right there on the website, you'll see that it's been 171 days with no substantive response. And that qualifier is important because I think there was an initial response that basically said nothing. It said, we're going to talk about the issue. Thank you so much for your advocacy and your views, and we're just going to eventually get to this at some point in the future with absolutely no guarantee of anything substantive coming down anytime soon, right?
They said they were basically said they were preparing a substantive response and asked for more information. Now, this is a debate that's been ongoing in the United States since the 1970s. There is a lot of information on the record. So instead of coming out with a response within the 60-day window, they did come out and say, we're considering this, please provide us with more information. And so if you go to the encryption website, there's actually a link to a site where the White House has asked for more information from people, so you can submit substantive comments. They actually responded again the day before Christmas Eve and again said, we're still looking for more information. And that's been the last time that we've heard from them on this.
Well, they have been kind of all over the map on the issue of encryption. Most recently, I guess you could call this a win in some respects, they refused to publicly support the Richard Burr and Dianne Feinstein bill that would ban end-to-end encryption, which just to kind of give you a sense of how much of an impact that would have, a company like WhatsApp has turned on end-to-end encryption for over a billion of its users. So we've got at least a billion people just on one app using end-to-end encryption. So when we talk about banning it, it is kind of insane. So the White House didn't want any part of that bill, but there's a difference between not supporting a piece of bad legislation and publicly supporting encryption. And in June of 2015, you had the FBI director, the FBI's part of the government, the administration. You had him saying, well, Silicon Valley just needs to try harder and figure it out. You had President Obama's comments at South by Southwest, where he seemed to suggest that we are fetishizing our phones when we talk about the importance of encryption. So what do you make of the White House being all over the place on this issue?
You know, it's really unclear what their position is. And their problem with the many different statements that they've come out with is that you can tell that there's kind of this dual-headed policy machine at the White House on this issue, and they haven't been able to come to any sort of resolution on it. The president's comments at South by Southwest were not what we would like to hear. They seem to suggest that he was actually walking away from a formerly fairly strong position that seemed to be leaning in favor of encryption just a few months prior. And he also, it said, reports have said that the administration has provided comments on the Burr-Feinstein legislation. So they haven't supported it, but they also haven't opposed the legislation. A coalition of more than 30 groups and companies and experts have asked them to do this. They haven't responded to that request. And they're providing comments on the legislation, which seems to indicate that they are engaging on this issue, on a piece of legislation that is almost uniformly in the technology community agreed to be absolutely ludicrous.
So the fact that they are maybe using this legislation as the vehicle for beginning to enter the discussion is not the most encouraging thing, because the legislation starts from such an absurd position that you'd have to really rethink the entire purpose of the legislation for it to be palatable to the vast majority of technologists and civil society groups that are privacy-minded and that care about this issue. Now, Access Now, this is an international organization, so you deal with the U.S. policy, but you're also, your organization is all over the world, and I know you have an office in Brussels, and while the U.S. debate on encryption, you know, end-to-end encryption is still legal here, and we haven't passed legislation mandating backdoors, and we've kind of been wishy-washy, and we've had this robust debate about Apple versus the FBI. Things are moving in other countries around the world. You just mentioned China. There's been some developments in the UK. So you, in the preparation for the show, gave me a bunch of countries to think about. Take your pick where you want to start.
Sure. I think actually the UK is probably One of the more interesting pieces of legislation we've seen on this issue, this is the investigatory powers bill that is currently being discussed and potentially, probably will be passed within the next few months. The bill actually doesn't take a direct stance on encryption. Instead, what it does is it allows the Secretary of State of the UK to order companies to take steps in order to preserve their ability to respond to judicial requests or court requests or government requests. In fact, in the UK, the judicial system isn't independent in the same way that we would imagine it in the United States. And that provision actually is tied to an extraterritoriality requirement. So it not only would apply to companies within the United Kingdom, but also any company that does business in the United Kingdom. So if you think about the internet, that's basically everybody, because the internet doesn't really know boundaries in the same way that physical companies do, or physical countries do.
And when the investigatory powers bill was first introduced, was there a measure on... So if there's a measure on orders to companies to comply, even if you don't say anything specific about encryption, what does that mean if, let's say, WhatsApp is end-to-end encrypted, they can't access their communications, and a UK court orders WhatsApp to produce intelligible text? I mean, how would you operationalize a bill that doesn't specifically say anything about encryption, but does specifically say that companies need to comply with court orders?
What the UK bill would actually allow them to do is to go to the company immediately and say, you're operating in a way that doesn't allow us to get content information from you. Here's something that you need to do in order to preserve that capability. So before that order is even issued, they can presumably require something of the company. Another provision of the bill actually also allows the government to require companies to insert vulnerabilities or malware through system updates. And these are the updates that are supposed to keep our devices and our systems secure. And so they're going to actually undermine the trust in the internet. And that trust is actually what allows the internet economy to exist in the way that we know it. We have to trust that our credit cards, that our credit card information isn't going to be breached, that our chat messages are safe. Every time there's a data breach, we get a little bit of a nudge in this direction of undermining trust. This is going to basically say there's potential for bad actors to have access to all of your data that transits the internet, which is a real problem for the economy.
Yeah, and there's always the potential for technology to be used for ill, but the vast majority of technology is used for good. And end-to-end encryption is a way for people all over the world who are much more likely to be the victim of a cyber attack than a terrorist attack to protect their data. Now, there are also, so the UK example is individual orders to companies. That's one way of tackling the issue, but Colombia has taken a different tack. What have they done?
So Colombia actually has an old law, probably one of the older laws that we've seen on the books, that outright bans encryption.
And we're not just talking about end-to-end. So we're talking about the type of encryption that was on the Apple phone in the San Bernardino case, which was just everything's encrypted, assuming you can't get the password right. Then there's encryption for email stored in the cloud. There's multiple types of encryption: data at rest, data in transit, data on a hard drive. All of that's illegal?
All of that is illegal for the ordinary user. There's another law, which actually is really interesting, that mandates that encryption be made available to high-level government officials.
Oh.
So while prohibiting its use by the everyman, it actually requires it to be used for people in what are considered important roles. So it's really this strange approach. It's never, as far as I can tell, been applied, which is good, but here's a law on the books from the early days of the internet when we didn't really understand technology. A lot of us didn't understand technology at all, that can be used in a way today to devastating effects.
So that's kind of crazy to think about. So these laws in Colombia are on the books, but I mean, I assume if I went to Colombia tomorrow and I pulled up WhatsApp, I would be able to use it, or I could use things that are encrypted, and if I had previously encrypted my phone in the United States and I get off my plane, maybe I'm committing an illegal act. But if there's a lack, I guess that opens up the door to selective enforcement. So if they're not using these laws, but they are on the books, that kind of allows them to pick and choose who they go after. And it's just deliciously ironic that the government is basically saying privacy for me, but not for thee.
Well, yeah, and then we get a situation like we saw in Brazil recently. And in Brazil, they are trying to get access actually to WhatsApp data. And, you know, we know that WhatsApp recently full turned on the switch for end-to-end encryption. Yeah. But they've been moving in this direction for a while, right, and moving their systems over. And so there is communications in Brazil that were supposedly end-to-end encrypted by WhatsApp. WhatsApp has no content at all. They cannot comply with this court order. And so Brazil actually took the opportunity when the Facebook vice president, when one of the Facebook vice presidents was local, Facebook, of course, owns WhatsApp, they arrested him and put him in jail for a few days. And it was a while until he was released. And so this type of going after corporate representatives for companies that implement strong security for users is really dangerous. It's actually an approach that France is looking to take as well. There's a bill in France to allow them to do this exact same sort of activity. And that is basically telling companies not to implement, not to even pursue strong security for their users. And it's really this backward-facing approach that's going to allow more data breaches to occur and keep user information really insecure.
So we've talked about different models of misguided approaches to encryption. I don't think any of these things that we've talked about are good things. It's really just a question of which is worse. But so in the UK, we've got orders to companies. In Colombia, we've got an outright ban on encryption that is, you know, selectively enforced. In France and Brazil, we're talking about actually arresting people who work at companies and putting them in jail for things that technologists and engineers are deciding, maybe in a different country. But then there's another model that you have told me. Kazakhstan and Hungary are examples of this. Tell us about what they're doing.
Sure. So they're actually, at least Kazakhstan is mandating user backdoors. So this is actually a requirement that users on their end devices install some sort of software that can allow the government to get around all encryption no matter what you're using. So even if you put WhatsApp or some other secure messaging service on top of that, it's built on top of a big hole. And so the government can use that to get into your system and get through the encryption without having to break into anything.
And would a way that I could, let's say I want to use WhatsApp in Hungary and Kazakhstan, if I set up a way on my phone that every single message I get and send is automatically copied to a file somewhere, just like a basic text file, would that be a way of complying with this? Or it's not up to the user to decide how they comply, they have to install government-sanctioned software on the actual device itself?
So in Kazakhstan, you have to install government-sanctioned software, from what we know. What happened was the New York Times looked into this. There was a notice on a telco website, one of the telcos that's government-owned, and the New York Times basically emailed them or called them and said, hey, what's up with this? And the company was like, IDK, and then that page came down. So we don't know the actual status of how they're enforcing this, but we know that this is still a requirement on the books. In Hungary, we're actually, the backdoor piece is still a legal proposal. It's still a bill that they're trying to push through, like the UK, in the next couple months. And that proposal is still in Hungarian. So the amount of information we've been able to get out of that is limited because we haven't been able to get an accurate translation of it yet. We do know from partners that it would require backdoors. So it's another one of these countries that is using the failure of a global leader to find a way to undermine security.
So we've talked about all these countries and their different approaches to encryption. Do you think that if President Obama, the White House, the U.S. State Department, they all had a synchronous, comprehensive, literate approach to encryption where we publicly affirm support for Americans and people all over the world to use strong end-to-end encryption, would that have an effect at least in blunting some of the more misguided legislation? Or are these countries just going to do what they want regardless of what we do?
So Access Now recently, and we're in the final stages of putting together a survey of laws in 19 different countries and trying to determine in what direction surveillance law is headed, how it's applied, what is actually on the books. And we try to do that because there's so much emphasis on the United States. We wanted to see what was capable and authorized, legally authorized to happen in other countries. And one of the trends that we observed almost across the books is that countries do use debates happening in other jurisdictions and other governments in order to justify themselves to take action. And so when you start seeing something like data retention, for example, is another issue where you see this pop up in one jurisdiction, other governments look at that and see it as a green light to move forward. And so now we're seeing data retention proposals everywhere from South America, Europe, Africa, kind of everywhere. People are trying to figure out where they can put in mandatory data retention. Encryption is the same issue. And so nobody has stood up and said, we can't do this from a government perspective. You have all the technologists, basically all of civil society, almost everybody who's not in government is in unanimous agreement that you can't do this. But there's been no government leader to say, we're not going to try to implement this into law. So there's nothing stopping countries from putting in place their own mechanisms. And because, as I said before, the internet is global, it's a global piece of communications technology, one country's backdoor is actually going to influence everybody. And so, for example, in Brazil, when you're seeing companies being disincentivized from developing encryption, that's not only going to be something that affects people in Brazil or people in France, that's going to be a disincentivization that kind of goes throughout everywhere where that company has products or services.
Yeah, and we certainly don't want to see a race to the bottom where every single company is trying to comply with the most stringent standard and then apply that to everywhere else just to be universal in their approach to encryption. But if that's a bad approach, and just in the interest of complying with something that China wants or Brazil wants, they undermine security for the people in other countries. That is exactly the type of situation that we would try to avoid by having a global leader on encryption and a cohesive message.
This actually stifles innovation, because only the major companies are going to be able to afford to put in place different products that satisfy all of these different approaches. The small, you know, startup company isn't going to be able to do that. So these smaller companies are going to have to either choose very little security or to implement products that don't comply with the law and go up against potentially uncapped fines. In China, there's actually no limit, no upper limit on a serious violation of their ban on encryption. And so the companies are putting a lot at risk if they aren't complying with that.
And similar to different countries doing different things, I mean, we have 50 states in the United States with different state governments, and we've seen states like California and New York try to introduce laws that would ban selling encrypted phones in their state, as if that wouldn't have an impact on other states. So certainly Tech Freedom, we put out a statement in response to those bills saying, whatever the hell the policy is, encryption needs to be a federal policy, because the internet is a global entity, and having this hodgepodge of state rules and local rules is certainly not a good approach. And that is basically our local version of the international hodgepodge, which is even more problematic.
Mm-hmm. And that's why Access Now supported Representative Liu's bill that would have preempted these state laws.
Exactly. Well, Amy, that's it for today's show. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Check out SaveCrypto.org to weigh in on the issue of encryption, and follow us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It will help us and help others find the show. Thank you for listening, and encrypt your cell phones.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.